Welcome to the iPro Nursing Home Quality Initiative Downstate New York Identified Participant Group Nursing Home Teleconference. This is a chance for us to share and collaborate and discuss the work we're doing. First, we did a roll call, so you ideally know all the facilities that are on. I just want to let you know that in addition to that, here with me today are two other members of our team. Dr. Gagliano?
Hi, good morning. I'm the medical director for the Nursing Home Quality Initiative.
Hi, good morning. I'm Dan Juracek, Performance Improvement Coordinator for the New Rochelle and Upstate region.
And many of you know him from working with us over the past 3 or 4 years. Okay. Well, just, yeah. Yes?
This is Dave Johnson. I was able to join the call.
Oh, great. Okay. And introduce yourself then.
Dave Johnson, the Performance Improvement Coordinator for Upstate New York.
Okay. Now, the plan of the call today really is to begin with a recap. I want to thank all of you for joining me. I know you're all on tight schedules. To recap, especially this project, the Center for Nursing for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, has directed us to focus on the quality measures of pressure ulcers, pain, restraints, and depression. In the 8th scope of work, we are looking for you to work as our champions of quality. For many of you who worked with us before, the difference for the 8th scope of work is that we've been asked to make transformational changes in these measures. The point being, we've been asked to make much larger percentage of improvement in your quality measures. That's why the graphs that I distributed to you showed you for Nursing Home Compare what your numbers were on quarter two of 2004, which is your baseline for this project. And then the last recent posting on Nursing Home Compare was 2005, quarter three. Does anybody have any questions about those graphs, and did everybody get to see them? If I get no response, I'll presume you did. Okay. Since we have to make such large changes, one of the identified methods for succeeding is to collaborate, and that's why I'm trying to bring you all together and touch base with you on a regular time frame. One way, of course, to collaborate would be our face-to-face meetings. To this point, we had the meeting in the rollout back in October, and then we also had the opportunity to meet here again February 1st at IPRO. Another method of meeting and collaborating is a teleconference. By this teleconference, you're able to have more members of your facility actually present to partake, which sometimes with a meeting outside the facility, you don't have that ability. And we do have on this call every discipline and every level of staffs. So as we go forward, what I would ask you to do is when you speak, introduce yourself and introduce your facility. And then if your position would be of relevance as you do your report, discuss your position at your facility as well before you discuss the work that you've been doing. Our final method for collaboration, but it's constant and ongoing, and I've been trying to promote it with you, and it's beginning to move along, and facilities are posting their information there, has been the Jenny 8th Scope Nursing Home IPG site. If you are having any trouble accessing this or posting your information, please call me. The minute you run into frustrations, I don't want you spending a lot of time, and I'll try to work with you, or our team here in communications will work with you to get you up and onto the site. The purpose of collaboration face-to-face here on the teleconference or on Jenny is to allow you to ask questions of each other, share the tools you've tried, post successful programs your facility has embarked upon, and essentially share what you've been doing. As some of you have said when we've been discussing this, the idea is to not have to reinvent the wheel. The iPro team will post tools that we have to share. And as you try the tools, what I ask is that you report on their use. And again, as I said, on this phone call, we have representatives from many departments and every level of staff, which is really great because quality improvement is everyone's job. What we're doing with continuous quality improvement is to look at what we do, how we do, and how can we do it better. The ultimate goal is to improve the care for each resident within the care required by the resident and the resources you have to deliver that care. What is the best way to accomplish it? Now, one of the things that my focus for today was to discuss with you facility data, because I have been asking for monthly updates, and we're trying to get those updates into a format where you are collecting data, and monthly you can see the improvements or not improvements regarding to the work you're doing. In advance, I had asked you to look at your quality measure trends on STAR. Specifically, we were discussing depression, but all the measures some of you are very good in, but what I would want if you're successful specifically in restraints, and we'll discuss this again later, would be to share what has brought you to that point of being successful. Nursing Home Compare and STAR will be updated soon with your fourth quarter of 2005. Some of you have pointed out that the data had been 6 months old. Obviously, now in April, if we get the end of December data up, it'll only be 4 months old. But following that comment, what I did discuss with you is actually trying to go into your Casper Keys MDS submission system and pull your QMQR reports. This data also is based on your MDS. However, it's not been put into the formula to allow for comparing with other facilities, yet it does give you your own information, your own MDS data related to measures that are now tied into the quality measures. Specifically, 2.1 was the increase in depression and anxiety. You can look at your numbers, you can look at the number of residents who trigger, and you can actually look on your trend for that specific measure. Also, you have the measure QMQI 11.1, the residents who were physically restrained. I have also been looking at, for each of the facilities, your incidence of new fractures, 1.1, and your prevalence of falls, 1.2, because sometimes these are the issues that facilities have brought up when they said restraints became an issue and that why they were returning to restraints for the safety of their residents. And basically, when we're doing those studies, we're really seeing there's really little difference between the facilities that restrain and the facilities that don't restrain. So we will discuss that. The final quality measure, QMQI, is the residents who have moderate to severe pain, and that is 8.1. So I don't know how many of you have had that opportunity to look at that information, but I have really pulled it for each of your facilities to see where you're at. The point would be that might give you more accurate information. You could pull it. On Monday it is updated, and you can see who triggered last week even all of these measures and pull those residents' list. Now, the reason I was discussing that is one way for us to get baseline data would be for you to pull that residence list and audit five of the charts related to the measures. See how those charts actually follow your policies and procedures. And if for one of the charts something isn't done, it's an area to begin to explore the why of why your policies weren't followed. Additionally, within your facility, you have your own in-house data. For pressure ulcers, all of you do wound documentation weekly. We are looking, some of you I think might track it by paper. I don't know how many of you have developed electronic systems, but to supplement that, we offered the pressure ulcer tracking tool, and many of you have started using it and reporting back to me, because that's when I asked you to let me know through your own system or through our tool that you track your pressure ulcers, your new nosocomials, the number of residents admitted with pressure ulcers. And for those of you who have worked with us for 3 years, those were items we were tracking all along. But what we have come to see is it's important to further track the stage, the sites, and we're truly looking at healing rates. What we have found, and with the numbers I just received on some of the monthly updates for, say, January through now using our pressure ulcer tool, the problem does remain that you admit a lot of residents. And for us to really make a dent in the pressure ulcer numbers, ideally we'll have to look at our ability to try to heal. However, those North Shore is on the call, and we had worked for the past 3 years with a National Nursing Home Improvement Collaborative. What they did find, the improvement was in the stages. And as I've discussed with you, if you look at your nosocomials, when are you finding them? Are you finding stage ones and thus not proceeding to stage twos. Within a day, actually, a stage one could turn into a stage two. But what you can find is that you are lowering your numbers even on your healing rates if you begin to track this closely. The additional feature of the tool, and some of you have already said you noticed it, is that you didn't really realize that maybe you have only a specific site of problem. Commonly, one of the areas is heels. We have discussed a good skin assessment on admission to really track whether the resident is coming in with basically skin damaged in the heel area. But even further into a stay at your facility, heels do remain a problem. We have discussed that booties in place alone may not be enough to relieve pressure. Sometimes the booties themselves have been reported to be a problem. But what our tool was devised to do was to help you track these items and hopefully possibly see a area where you could focus further. Does anybody else have any specific pressure ulcer data that they would be tracking or their own system?
Maureen, this is Cindy O'Connor from Ozenham.
Yes.
I'm using the pressure ulcer tracking form that was developed by you folks. And I don't know whether maybe I'm doing something incorrectly or what, but I'm not able to, well, I don't understand why once something is healed in the month and you do your monthly end program, that those ulcers still stay on for the next month back again when they're already healed.
Okay, ideally that doesn't happen. Dave, do you want to address it?
The question I'd have is let's see, there are two, I'm doing this from memory now, there's a column that you're supposed to put in the original stage if it was healed, not only just the date healed, but also the stage, and I'm wondering if you did that.
I'm putting in, for instance, a nosocomial that came up as a stage two in the pressure ulcer acquired in-house.
Yep.
And then I'm moving over to the date of onset.
Yep.
And then, now, I've had a couple, for instance, I had one that began on March 1st, and it healed March 2020. But when I go to look at the graph and then that page that talks about the overall summary of the month, It doesn't come up that anything's healed. So I don't know whether all I'm doing is putting the date in there. So I don't understand.
There's another column. Find it here. What we can possibly do.
Yeah, we could discuss this later, I guess. Right. Cindy, I'll put you either directly in touch with Dave or I'll call you back and play with it on my computer at the same time, and then maybe we can see where the discrepancy might be. But has anybody else had a similar problem to Cindy in trying to use it or doing the end-of-month routine to eliminate those that are healed or discharged? Has anybody used it and successfully move to the next month? I do have Providence Rest report here, but unfortunately DOH walked in on them today. Anybody else tried the tool and successfully implemented data? Because ideally we gave the tool out in February, so some of you may not have implemented it to March. So if you used it in March, you would at least have tried to turn it into April. I know one facility was trying to backtrack all their data also and had called us.
Baseline for the month of March and closed out the month
successfully. Okay, now where is that, Ellen? Sorry, I didn't hear the facility.
Isabella?
Oh, Isabella, okay.
Yeah, we're using it on one unit. We're piloting it on one unit to see how the staff adapt to it as well as how useful the clinical team finds the data that it generates.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any specific pressure ulcer tracking data they'd want to mention before we proceed?
Hi, Maureen.
Yes.
CNR here.
Yes.
We just got our tool out of the computer and we're going to start looking back at March with the tool. The tool is appears to be a bit laborious, if that's the word. We really think we want to look at it being used in maybe a pilot area.
Well, that's what we suggest, definitely pilot. And I know, you know, because you've been working with us for the past 3 years, you were using the other tool and giving me that data. So we're just looking to focus more on...
giving you the other tool in the meantime until we get all the information onto this new tool.
Right. I know it's a lot more information than you gave me before, but we do believe breaking it down by stages, looking really at your sites, and if you can even just use it going forward with new pressure ulcers that come into your facility, capturing the date would really be of value. So I do know, you know, since you've been tracking for all these years, if a suggestion might be just to start it with the new pressure ulcers as they come in, whatever would make it easier, because then you would be easily able to capture that data. It might be hard, I guess, to go back depending on what kind of record you have in your facility. Anybody else? Okay, the next issue I have listed really is restraints. Again, the data you collect that's somewhat related to restraints would obviously be, you'd certainly know and track all the residents in your facility that have restraints and what restraints they're using. But additional related information possibly might be, why did they end up on the restraint? Your initial assessment forms for restraints, if it's within 24 hours of admission. Some facilities actually have that form. If you don't really have a form for assessment, I guess the question would be, when you do use a restraint, what is your facility's process and how is that recorded? Also, there is the issue of the fall risk forms. Usually on admissions, you do screenings for your fall risk forms. You could probably track, I guess, how you're treating the residents who are at high risk for falls and if that's tying into the use of restraints. Additionally, there is your incident reports. Now, that occur, those you write up for every kind of event, but possibly those could be turned into an electronic type Excel program. We actually are working on a tool that we may be able to offer and might help you to create a database of this kind of information. Does anybody have any tools specifically related to monitoring their restraints that's giving them any data? Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that has been an issue. What I would like to highlight, John J. Foley, you said you were on the call. Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Okay. Do you want to discuss, because I really think it was good, your recreational program, because I do believe that's really one of the major issues that might help certain facilities reduce their restraint numbers, and your numbers have shown dramatic decline from 204 through now.
Hold on. I'm going to put the key person on.
Okay.
Hi, Maureen.
Hi.
Hi. That was the program I was speaking to you about yesterday.
Yeah, I really thought it was good, and it is something we've been looking at to have out there, and you were one of the facilities that actually discussed it. So do you mind explaining what your recreational team did?
No, I don't mind. What we did a few years ago was we have an activities department that they do a lot of recreational activities with the residents. They come in at 11 and leave about 7 or 7:30. So it covers that time that they're after they've eaten dinner and then they're getting ready to go to bed. And we feel that it's lessened the amount of falls because they have different crafts for them to do. Sometimes they can go up to another floor and they'll have a DJ that will, you know, have a theme for that particular week, or if it's Mardi Gras or whatever it is for the month, you know, they'll hand out masks, and they had some beads they were wearing. And they do a lot to keep them occupied, and that we feel that has had a major impact on lessening the amount of falls.
Yeah, it definitely shows in your data, and we have thought that program can be very successful. So I don't know if you have it written in any way, but it would be great to put it on Jenny, because we do have facilities that are primarily looking at restraint reduction in their facilities. So they might benefit from that kind of information.
Okay.
Thanks.
From Mary Maddie Walsh Home.
Yes.
Hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
All right. My question is, did you identify, I'm speaking to the person from J.J. Foley?
Right.
Identify the four that had motive.
Hi,
how do you concentrate your efforts?
John J. Foley, that's for you. Mary Manning's asking, how did you identify the areas, I guess, to increase the recreational coverage? Is it throughout the house, certain units? Did you identify certain residents for the program?
No, it's throughout the house. Leave it on. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. It's throughout the house, but the Dementia 4 will, they usually stay on that floor versus being brought to anything else because they wander. They'll have different recreational activities for them. But the third floor, the rest of the building can go there, and those particular activities are just, they're different, what they're going to do with them. DJ and the birthdays.
So
they'll still do birthdays for the dementia patients, but they do it on that floor itself. Okay, so that's how you keep the staff at the level where, I mean, you could practically have.
Mary Manning, you were asking the staff, I guess the number of staff involved is what you're thinking about?
Yes, I understand now how they have the staff to deal with the numbers of people,
right?
Because they have them on a particular unit, the residents, and then they're moving the other residents to that unit.
Right.
That's what I understand.
Yeah. Now, one of the issues here really is size and layout as we're discussing this. In other words, John J. Foley, how many floors do you have? Because I know you're a little smaller than... You have seven units?
Right. We have about eight people in activities. Overall, but we have a lot of volunteers that come in.
Oh, okay. That's a big help. Mary Manning, I forget, how many floors do you have? Because I know you're quite high.
Resident care areas, I believe, is 12 units.
Right. On six floors then, or 12
floors? 12 floors.
12 floors, yeah. So the dynamics is a little different, and it might take more staff, but certainly we could have them put up the information and how they've been working it regarding residence size, number of staff involved. One of the other things John J. Foley had pointed out was actually the therapeutic recreation people actually competed for the position. They had a lot of staff who was interested in coming in later and leaving at that hour. So anyway, that's what we're looking for, is for those of you who have successfully maintained zero restraints, and those of you who have dramatically brought your numbers down, and maybe by a certain situations are using one or two, really, what programs do you have and what can you share? I really think that would be of great value. Okay, moving forward, for the pain measure, essentially for pain, you can, again, track who triggers pain by chart review through the QMQI, pull the resident list and do a audit to see who triggered and review as a team, as you do as your care player, meaning really, was there an alternative for why this resident is triggering pain. Certainly PRN medication puts you at risk, ideally round-the-clock medication. And again, we're only looking this scope of work at the chronic measure, and frequently that population can successfully be maintained on an around-the-clock standing dose as long as you are clear on what their problems are specifically related to initiating the need for pain. One of the issues that has come up in discussions, obviously, where possibly you might find an issue, would be the half-hour medication, ideally just ordered before either a dressing change or a therapy sessions, because those incidents have been tied into increased pain. Obviously, in the chronic population, therapy sessions may not be as aggressive, and certainly if they're back from the hospital on a subacute program, it's a little different. But does anybody else have anything they do to monitor their pain? Some of you are focusing on it as we go forward. Okay, well, as I say, for those focusing on pain, we would really suggest you pull those that triggered even just last week on your MDS for pain and look at the charts and see if there's any change in your care plan that might help eliminate that issue. Now, I don't want this call really to go too long. One of the major topics that we wanted to quickly discuss was depression. After our meeting in February, most of you did not have in place what you would call was a depression policy. And looking at your pressure numbers, depression numbers, there was a concern that low numbers possibly indicate that depression is not being addressed at your facility. The reasons being, from the Dave study, there is the issue that Section E, the mood section, has not been actually completed accurately or completed really at all. In other words, identifying everybody as not having any of the moods, and in reality, we anticipate many do. We at IPRO are suggesting, based on national guidelines, that you would screen for depression on admission because the measure triggers based on a worsening of your mood from the one MDS assessment to the next, one full assessment to the next full assessment. Thus, if you screen on admission and capture a resident's mood, ideally within that time frame, you would only see an improvement in mood or a maintaining of mood. There is the issue that if we miss the capturing the mood on the initial MDS, as you get to know the resident on the follow-up MDSs, you will then be triggering the measure for due to the fact that you now know the resident and truly know their moods. Along with the depression, I had sent to all of you questionnaires and had gotten back your, you know, information on that. Again, most do not have a written policy on depression, yet many do feel that they are addressing it pretty thoroughly. One of the ways that facilities have been capturing it, of course, has been the residents admitted with medications. I guess the concern is the number of residents admitted without any antidepressant medications. Are they potentially at a risk of triggering or needing it? And that's where we suggest the screen. However, in addition to that, what I do have to discuss with you is as I pulled everybody's numbers and looked at some of the residents triggering pain, it really wasn't admission MDSs necessarily. Actually, it was quarterly to quarterly. So a critical piece also has to be the ongoing assessing and monitoring of depression and moods, because according to the quarterlies, you know, they were not significant changes, so it was really just a routine follow-up, yet there had been some, those were the people who were triggering your quality measure. Now, regarding depression, different members of the staff, facilities have said that they really had questions. And on the call, we do have Clove Lakes and a few of you that have policies and programs in place. Downstate, we are fortunate. Most of you report having the availability of a psychiatrist and a psychologist and the ability to have them quickly involved. But does anybody have a specific question on depression? All right, well, Clove Lakes, are you on?
Yes, we are.
Do you want to discuss your program then?
Basically, we're very fortunate to have a social service director who has a psych background, and also we have a counseling coordinator who is an RN trained in psych. We have a psychiatrist, three psychiatrists on board, as well as two psychologists. So with the coordination of the team, we're fortunate enough to find those people who trigger for depression on admission. The psychiatrist often sets the time frames as to the follow-up of when these residents will be seen, you know, depending on the mood state that they find them in. So it's a team effort. Nursing is on board, but we do identify them early enough on admission.
Thank you. Now, did anybody have any specific questions as they've been trying to create a policy? Hi, somebody's not muted, and unless you're going to ask a question. Hello?
Hello?
Yes? All right, well, again, it did seem in general that based on the answers to the questions I've received, facilities that seem to have a position where there's a psychiatrist quickly involved in the program on admission have not formally been using any of the tools for evaluation. But again, we do suggest you look at it. Most of you do report your social workers have been involved. One of the other issues as we look at this is your communication regarding moods. Essentially, the documentation is mostly in nursing notes, psych notes, social worker notes. Discussions of how your frontline staff, your CNAs, report moods and changes has really been reported by everybody only to be a verbal. So my question would be, do you feel that the CNAs, if they're not included at your care plan meetings, are you really getting their full input? But as we go forward, what I'm looking for and have been discussing with each of you on a week, on a monthly update, is to begin to really pull together data specific related to the measure you're working on. And as I have briefly said, one of the easiest ways, if you're not using our tool specifically, would be to pull the residents, just five charts of who might have triggered a measure, and closely audit it to monitor whether your processes have been followed. We do have, again, on the call, disciplines from all different positions. We have unit managers and unit nurses. You can look at the functioning on your unit, assess individual assignments, encourage your staff to discuss challenges with actually implementing care plans. As I've said many times, one piece where we don't have true data is the actual turning and positioning of residents according to the desired care plan. That is not nationally any data to support success in that issue, and it is always an ongoing question. The CNAs, your key to all the process data, all the information we're discussing, every step of what you do in caring for a resident. If you're not able to follow a care plan, if you're not able to complete your assignment as you're prescribed, at the end of the day, develop a system where the CNA and the nurse discuss what went well for the day. Focus even on one resident. Focus on two of your residents to see how you do. But on a daily basis, you can see if you succeed at implementing a care plan. On a weekly basis, you can see if you're able to do it for your full assignment. These are all areas of potential process problems that could be addressed either by changes in staffing, teamwork on the unit. And again, it's individual. It's up to you to work out. But those are areas where we're suggesting even the CNAs become involved in quality improvement and what works and what doesn't work on their assignments. Finally, on the call, we also do have administrators and medical directors. Obviously, you tend more to look at the outcome data, the quality measures. Well, we are encouraging the beginning of looking at truly your processes. So in that light, what we have just started to roll out is the NIFT Nursing Home Improvement Feedback Tool, because that's what we do have to assist you with looking at your processes. At this point, we've just begun. I think I've mailed the registration form to about 10 of the facilities, because we're slowly going to get you registered to be able to use the tool and upload the data. Immediately, though, you can start using the NIFT tools, the paper tools, and begin chart audits. The suggestion for the NIFT tool is to look at the processes. Essentially, what we're asking you to do would be look at the required questions. The required questions for each of the measures will assess how you are evaluating your residents on admissions. For each of the measures within the 48 hours, for restraints, for pressure ulcers, for pain, and for depression, do you do the screening, and how do you do the screening? The additional questions on the NIF tool will allow you to follow up and see the follow-up for each of the measures, in other words, the evaluation and the treatment. Now, has anyone started using the NIFT on their admitted residents? At this point, again, it was only about 10 of you that received it early in April. All right, well, again, that is something we'd like to see you begin doing, actually using the NIFT to look at the admits through April and evaluate the audit the chart to see are your policies and procedures being followed. A few of you have sent back the registration for the QualityNet system. Does anybody have questions specific to this? Because we could address them now. All right, well, on an individual basis, then I will have to, contact each of you, and we will discuss the process evaluation specifically related to each of the measures. Now, does anybody have any specific questions? It's coming to the end of the hour, and I want to be sure that all your concerns were addressed.
Maureen?
Yes.
I'm speaking from Island Nursing, Maggie. For us?
Yes.
Buying the depression tool, all right?
Yes.
My policy has been for the workers to do it by the 14th day of admission. You feel that, you believe that's too late a time frame?
Well, I have seen that written. The materials we've been given is encouraging us to encourage you to do within 7. The only point would be you would have that evaluation for your first MDS. By doing it for your 14th, well, I guess on your chronic it might work, but on your Medicare people, because you're definitely doing it by the 7, you might be missing their moods, and what will happen is you will trigger, because you would, by the time you capture their mood, you'd end up with a mood worsening, because on the original one, you wouldn't have it. So that's the reason. I think
Could I respond to that? Because one of the things I notice on the subacutes is that they often come in very, sometimes in delirium still
right.
Not very clear from the hospitalization nor the illnesses. And then I don't feel that that's a reliable indicator.
Right, right. Well,
sometimes I don't even know how to address that in the MDS, but I will indicate where I feel there's been a, person whose mood is maybe more confounded by their delirium and their illness. And that's how I document it.
Right, and that's in your notes. Then how do you capture it on the MDS regarding, say, mood section E?
I might say sad and depressed, or sad and pained.
Right.
And actually, then the next, and that's how I will capture it. I will only probably make that trigger, generally. I won't go, because the other things aren't going to be so clear.
Right.
They don't show those, some of the other mood items.
Right.
But I will capture one that for that sad, pained expression, because that's usually what you do see,
Right.
And say that it's an adjustment, seems to be still struggling with, effects of illness. And by the second 14 day, then I'll really will have captured the person, and sometimes that does clear up, or, they may be triggering for mood state and a care
right,
plan for
right.
mood.
Well, as I say, what we're beginning to do is really look at this to see how what we're coding on the MDS affects our quality measure number. So certainly, that could be an issue if you can't evaluate them thoroughly when they're admitted. So, and unfortunately, as you say, with delirium, if the only mood you can capture is sad and depressed, yeah, then you might trigger. But with the 14 days, then you actually wait until the 14th day to actually look at the screen. However, you're capturing moods on the original MDS based on notes and observations?
Yes, and then doing the depression scale, the geriatric depression scale. 14th day.
On the 14th day.
From, you know, from whatever time from, you know, their admission to the 14th.
Right, right. But so with the original MDS, you would be just capturing their moves in Section E based on your observations and notes up to that point.
Right.
So, well, as I say, if you wanted to pilot and see if it did any difference, because the point would be to know whether it's affecting your triggering of the quality measure, essentially, would be the issue. And depression, again, is more of a chronic measure. There's a good chance if these are true subacutes that they may not be affecting your numbers and that you may not be seeing them in it. In other words, if they come in somewhat delirious, it's a true subacute and they go home and they don't stay, then they never get into your chronic numbers, so it might not be an issue. So that might be part of it if the policy is not causing a problem. So,
true subacute is 30 days? Is that how it's?
Well, subacute is actually, you know, for some of those residents, I mean, you could keep them up to 90, depending on what they are, but many times, a true subacute, yes, would be just your MDS coding that only goes for the Medicare issues, the PPS returns. As long as you're not chronic, identifying them as a chronic resident, they won't go into your chronic numbers. We do discuss for pressure ulcers, many times you have a person readmitted with a pressure ulcer, and thus you're capturing both Medicare and chronic at the same time. So your readmits, even though there's some subacute rehab going on, in reality, they go right into your chronic. However, since you've just brought up depression, presuming it's a true delirium post-op, because I know they do come to you much quicker than they used to, If it's a healing surgical person, they could go home and never really make it into your depression. So you might have to look at that to see how many in your facility are triggering the QM based on whether you do it at 7 or 14 days. And certainly maybe just your subacute is a different unit than the rest of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have any specific questions?
Maureen?
Yes.
Sandy Jackson, I'm director of rehab at Buena Vida.
Yes.
And I don't have a question, but we run zero restraints.
Right.
And one of the programs that we set up is an exercise program that rehab taught to the recreation department. And they have two programs, one for residents that can ambulate and one for residents that are wheelchair bound. And, you know, they go through the program and then we pick out another group. And hopefully with that added exercise, then we have fewer falls.
So how long have you been practicing this? Do you have any data to show? Have your falls decreased?
Yeah, a year.
And our falls have definitely decreased markedly, significantly since last year.
That's great. Do you have that written to post on Jenny for all to review? And the other piece, I guess, that goes along with it is, because like the two facilities that spoke before, I guess, how big is your facility and how many units do you have?
And we have 40 beds. We have 6 units. One unit is a subacute unit, one unit is a dementia unit, and then the other four are kind of a mixture.
And this program then runs probably by day, and it's rehab identifies certain residents and puts them through the program.
Right.
Okay. And then how is it maintained, you're saying, recreation?
Recreation carries it out. We train them in, you know, very basic exercise programs. Mm-hmm. And then we chose the residents that we thought were most at risk, you know, based on their falls assessment.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'd love to see if you have that electronic and we could put it up so we could share it, you know, the details.
Okay, this is Barbara McFadden, Vice President of Resident Care Services here at Buena Vida.
Yes.
We started this a year ago because we noticed the numbers of falls, and it was just by just verbally hearing the number of falls in morning report. And at that time, it was suggested, since it's multidisciplinary, that we establish a falls committee, which was headed by our associate director of resident care services. That falls committee became interdisciplinary one, and as a result, the program that Sandy just mentioned is part of a comprehensive committee. And yes, it's remarkable how they have, our falls have diminished, and as a result of the data gleaned from over the years' worth of data, we've instituted putting all new admissions on the Falling Star program for the first, definitely the first 2 weeks. And if there's an incident, then, of course, by the first CCP meeting, we will meet as a team to determine whether it should be continued. So we'll be happy to put it, you know.
That'd be great. I really appreciate that. Thank you. All right, well, it's at the end of the hour. So what I would ask at this point is, number one, any ideas that you've come up with through this, certainly let me know, but you can continue the conversations and the discussions on the Jenny 8th Scope of Work Nursing Home IPG site. That's really what it's there for. I'd like to see this kind of sharing continue. And there is an evaluation. It's been emailed to many people, so if you can make duplicates and have everybody complete one and fax it back to us. And your comments and your ideas for future topics, or what you could use, what you could need to hear, because we can also have presenters related to each of the measures. But what I'm really looking for at this point was to begin to look specifically at your own data and specifically look at depression. So if anybody does have any questions following this call, please let me know. But again, put your questions on Jenny, and we can all put the information out there. Okay, thank you.